All right, how you guys doing this morning? Okay, good, good. If you didn't notice as you pulled in this morning, we have steel going up, right? So that's exciting. Just so you can know what you're kind of looking at, if you haven't really noticed, take a look at it after service. But that steel that's up right now is actually, it's the structure that will be inside of the building. And so it's the structure that will hold the seating, okay? Or at least the back half of the seating, which is all raised. So you can kind of picture what it's going to look like, which is exciting. And over the next few weeks or so, not this week, they're going to work on welding everything together there. But then the following week, they're going to be bringing in all the precast concrete risers that'll be coming in that sits on top of that steel. So that will look different and that'll be exciting. And then just about a week or two after that, they will be bringing in the rest of the steel for the building. So pretty exciting, right? Yeah. All right. Yeah. So we're pumped. And the goal is hopefully by spring, we're in and ready to roll. So excited to be a part of that. Today we're in part 27 of our series in Matthew, as we walk through, kind of do a quick flyover. I mean, we haven't even covered everything through the book of Matthew. We've been in this since Christmas all year so far, and we only got a few weeks left, and we'll have the whole book done. Over the last month and a half, we have been talking about the things that Jesus has said, particularly on the Tuesday before he is arrested and killed. Okay, that happens on Thursday and Friday later on in this week. And so just to kind of recap that day, just to give us the context of what's going on, on Tuesday morning, Jesus, he heads up to the temple in Jerusalem. There are huge crowds upon crowds upon crowds of people there. Everybody wants to hear the things that Jesus is saying, because he's saying things that no one has ever heard anybody actually say before. And as Jesus is teaching the crowds, the religious leaders show up. Remember this? They show up and they start asking Jesus all these trick questions, trying to trick Jesus and to trap Jesus. And in their minds, they want to turn the crowd against Jesus. And after a few of those questions, Jesus has had enough. And the conversation eventually ends with Jesus going off on them. We covered this, I think, 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago. The conversation, it kind of abruptly ends where Jesus starts calling them hypocrites and selfish and arrogant and greedy and blind fools and rotting dead things on the inside and children of hell. You remember that? Okay. And so Jesus kind of blows up on them. And right after that happens, the religious leaders, once they hear this, and this would have been a shock to everybody. You got to understand. I mean, it's a shock to the religious leaders. They've never heard anybody talk to them in that way before. I mean, it's a shock to his followers. I mean, his followers are like, yo, Jesus, what are you doing? Dude, we need these guys on our team. Jesus, you're offending them. And then the rest of the crowd, I mean, everybody is just in complete shock after Jesus says these things. And the religious leaders, they leave and they go off to begin to actively plan on how they're going to kill him later on in that week. And meanwhile, Jesus and his guys, they leave the city. And at this point in the day, it's late. I mean, it's like evening. Jesus has spent all day teaching and talking to people. And so Jesus, as they're making their way to the small little village called Bethany, which is just kind of on the outskirts of Jerusalem, about 2 miles away, Jesus detours and he starts climbing up the next mountain over. Jerusalem's built on a mountain. And so the next mountain over is this mountain called the Mount of Olives. And Jesus climbs over. It's just right to the east of Jerusalem. He starts climbing up and he takes four of his guys with him, and they got questions. I mean, they're like, yo, Jesus, what was that all about? Jesus, what are you talking about? Jesus has told them that the Jerusalem's going to be destroyed. They're like, when's all this going to happen? I mean, they got a bunch of questions specifically about the end of the world. And when, Jesus, when are you going to become king? I thought you were the king. Like, when is this happening? You're talking about leaving, then you're going to come back. Like, when is all this going to happen? And Jesus starts talking about what this is all going to look like. And so for us here today, over the last 3 weeks, we have been working through Jesus's complicated answer. And we've heard some kind of crazy, some different stuff. And so today we're going to wrap this up. Now, last week, if you remember, it directly ties into what we're talking about today. Jesus tells two stories. Remember this? He tells two stories to make two major points. And Mike did a great job explaining those two stories. The first one, he says, guys, picture this. All right, picture the 10 ladies attending a wedding. Half of them aren't ready when the wedding starts. And you guys remember that story?
Yeah.
Remember? Okay. And his point was basically like, hey, we need to be ready. Right? It wasn't just for them back then. It's also for us here today. He's saying, yo, all right, if we are Jesus followers, if we're truly Jesus followers, he's saying, I am coming back someday, and you, our job is to be ready for that day. Okay? And so he tells that story, and the disciples are like, okay, yeah, all right, I don't know exactly what that means, but okay. And then Jesus tells them another story. He's like, picture this. All right, remember, he's like, hey, let's picture a boss who's got like three employees, and he gives them each money to invest, and one of the employees just does nothing with it. He buries it, and then he gets it back up. When his boss comes back, he's like, here it is. Here's your money back. But he hasn't made any money with it. And Jesus says, that's lazy, that's wicked, that's messed up. Like that employee is going to be immediately fired, and that's what the boss does. And so Jesus is teaching us through that story. He's like, hey, you should be busy leveraging whatever God has given you for his kingdom, right? We should be busy leveraging all of the things that God has given us. We don't have anything like in and of ourselves, right? Everything that we have is God-given. And he's saying you should be leveraging your talent and your money and your resources and your time to doing his will, which is for us as Christians, our main mission is to do whatever we possibly can to save as many people as we possibly can. I mean, how are we doing at that? I don't think we do very well. I don't think we do any of these things, really. Not really. I don't think many of us are like locked and loaded and ready for him to come back, and we're ready for that to happen like, you know, any minute. And I don't think a lot of us leverage our stuff and the blessings that he has given us to help reach more people around us. I just don't think we do that. And so Jesus is talking about stuff that directly applies to us here today. Now, we're going to pick up right where we left off. And Jesus, he kind of gets back to the guy's original question as he wraps up this conversation. And he's talking about things that haven't happened yet. Okay, so the stuff that we're going to be looking at today, it's in the future. It's going to happen. It hasn't happened yet. And God wants us to get a glimpse of what the day that Jesus comes back, he wants us to get a glimpse of what that will actually look like. And so starting in Matthew chapter 25, verse 31, he says, when the Son of Man comes. Now, who's the Son of Man? Jesus. All right, it's Jesus. Yeah, not some trick question. Some of you guys are like, Jesus. Yeah, it's the safe answer for any question at church. Jesus, okay? So you're pretty good if you say that. So the Son of Man is Jesus. And specifically, the phrase Son of Man, it comes out of Daniel. Daniel talks a lot about the Messiah in the Old Testament, way back when, hundreds of years before Jesus shows up on the scene. And Daniel writes about, hey, this is what the Messiah is going to do. He's going to be the Savior. These are the kind of things. And so here's Jesus. He's claiming to be that guy again. And so let me interpret this for you. He says, when I come back in all of my glory. Now, for us as Christians, not everybody in here, but for many of us, we usually just read past this type of stuff. Okay, we're like, okay, yeah, when he comes back with all of his glory, and like we're like, yeah, glory and God, they kind of go together, right? Like we view them as, you know, of course Jesus has glory and all that kind of stuff. Okay, we're all into that. It's just interesting because while we associate glory with God, and yeah, of course he's got that, a lot of times when we think of Jesus, you know, the way we think of him is just different. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's because of art and pictures that we see or just because of the churches that we've attended or whatever. But when we think of Jesus, I think a lot of us, like, picture him right now. Like how you view him during this time, sitting up there on the mountain. A lot of times we view Jesus as like the quiet guy petting lambs and like high-fiving kids and stuff. You know, that's like how we view him. And he's always wearing like a robe dress thing. And we view him as very gentle. And we view him as just, to be honest, we just kind of view him as soft. This isn't that. All right, it's not. See, as we've talked about before, Jesus, when he came down, he emptied himself. Think of it as like a coat that you take off. He took off his glory. Why? Because if he didn't take off his glory, it'd be too overwhelming for us. Right? If he didn't take off his glory, we can't look at him and survive. That's just how it is. It reminds me of Moses. A lot of you guys, you know the story in the Old Testament where this is way before Jesus shows up. Moses, he's doing his thing, and one time he's just like, hey God, can I see your glory? I'd really like to see your glory. And God looks at him and he's like, Moses, you can't see my glory and like survive that. You don't know what you're asking for. And Moses is like, oh man, okay, all right. And the God's like, hey, here's what I'll do for you, all right? I don't have to do this, but I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna take you, and he puts Moses in like this crack of a rock, like a cleft of a rock. He kind of shoves him in there, and then God takes his hand and he covers up the crack in Moses, and then God says, I'm gonna pass by you. So he passes by Moses and he says, after I pass by, I'm gonna allow you, I'll pull my hand back and I will allow you just to get a tiny glimpse of the tail end of my glory. How about that? And Moses is like, I'll do it, I'm in. And they do that, and if you remember, Moses' face, like his skin glowed like a light bulb for like a week after that, right? Just because he saw the tail end of God's glory. It should kind of remind you of the story of what we've already seen within this series. Remember when this might be about like 2.5-3 months ago, but for them, it was about a month before this very conversation up on this mountain, on the Mount of Olives. Jesus and his guys, they're up north in the region called Galilee. And so they're up there, and it's just right when they begin to walk. So they start walking south towards Jerusalem, and it takes them a long time to get there because they stop in town after town after town and village after village. But this is right at the beginning, about a month before. And if you remember, the guys are kind of like on a camp out, so he leaves the guys at the camp, and it's evening, and Jesus takes Peter, James, and John, and they go up to the next mountain over. They climb up a mountain, and up there, Jesus gives them like a glimpse of himself. Remember this from like a few months ago? Ah, okay, three. All right, I'll take that. Thank you. Okay, but let me just remind you. Jesus, what he does is he pulls off part of his humanity for like a few minutes. And remember what the guys did? When they see just a glimpse of what Jesus truly is? I mean, these are guys that like spent their days with Jesus. Like they lived with Jesus. They were tight with Jesus. Seeing Jesus wasn't anything abnormal to them. They saw him every day. Remember what they did? They fell on their face. That's what they did. Because it was too intense for them. And in fact, Peter, he starts like babbling about tents and stuff. Like, oh, we're going to do it. You know, and he doesn't know what he's saying. It's almost like they lost their train of thought. They lost their mind. That was the true Jesus. Remember I said it was like, you know how it is, especially you guys. Like you've been out there, you know, you're outside. It's cold outside in the winter and you're all wet. And it's cold. You got these wet clothes on that are just cold, and you're kind of just miserable all day long. And then you finally get inside, and you take off the cold, wet clothes, and you put on the warm, the dry, warm clothes, and it's just like, you know what I'm talking about? You ever felt that before? I wonder if that's how it was for Jesus. You know, he peels off his humanity part of his humanity for just a couple of minutes, and he kind of wraps himself back in his glory, and he's like, oh, I've missed this. In fact, he even says that once. One time, he tells him, he's like, man, I cannot wait to have my glory back. Like the glory that I've always had. He says, even before the world existed, I have my glory. And so here's Jesus. He's saying, hey guys, focus in. He's like, I'm coming back, but next time it's not going to be like this. He says, next time I'm bringing all my glory with me. I'm going to be wearing it, basically. And it's not just going to be me. He says, I'll also have all the angels with me, and then I will sit on my glorious throne. Can you picture this? All right, can you picture this in your minds? Jesus someday is going to show up in the sky, and he's going to come down, and he's going to bring all of his angels with him. Now, how many is that? Is it like 3, 4, 5, 10? What's that? I don't know, but I know one time John, he has this like vision of heaven. It's in the book of Revelation, and he glances around. He does kind of a quick count of the angels. He's like, okay, all right, I see those. Okay, there's those over here and over there. You ever do that with like, I don't know, you go into a store, you go into a party, you judge a line at Walmart where you're like, okay, there's like, that's too big. Like there's that many people, there's this, that type of thing. Just kind of does a quick count. I was in the state up north last week, okay? They got a lot of work to do up there, I could tell you that. And we did fireworks up there in a really, really, really small town. and we go to this town, and we're going to the park, and the park is like filled with people. Like there's tons of people everywhere. And I was following behind this kid and his mom, and the kid's like, he does the quick count thing. Like he's like, oh man, there's a lot of people here. He's like, Mom, do you think there's like a million people here? And he's like, serious. And the mom's like, no, you know, not no way. It's kind of like that John does. John gets a glimpse of heaven, and he looks around, and he's like, no lie. He's like, man, this has got to be like 100 million angels. He says, this is like 100 million angels plus thousands and thousands. So whatever number that is, that's how many angels we're talking here. And so Jesus is like, yeah, they're all coming with me. They will all be with me. And I will come down and I'm going to take my rightful place as king. See, the first time Jesus came 2,000 years ago, he came humble. A baby in a manger type stuff, born in a barn. He came to serve his own creation, which is crazy to think about. But when he returns, he is coming with power and he is coming with glory. Sometimes I talk to people, and you've probably heard people say this, maybe even to you, where they're like, hey, when I meet Jesus someday, I got a lot of questions he's going to have to answer. You ever hear something like that? And every time I hear that, I'm like, bro, you ain't asking him jack. I'm just saying. Like, you're going to fall down on your face and, like, pee a little. Like, that's what you're going to do. All right, he's going to freak you out. So Jesus is saying, I'm coming with all my glory. I'm coming with my angels. And when I come back, he says, all the nations will be gathered before me and I will separate them one from another. How is he going to separate that? How is he going to separate us? Is he going to separate us the way that we separate each other? By race, by sex, by gender, by nationality, by social status. By, I think the biggest one more than race, more than anything, is class. All right? Is he going to separate us like that? No. Jesus don't play games like that. No, he's going to be separating people who have surrendered their life to him and people who haven't. Right? Not whether you went to church or not, not whether you were religious or not, not whether you believed in him or not. No, he's going to separate people who have surrendered their life to him and people who haven't. And so he's going to start separating. He says, just as shepherds separate the sheep from the goats. He says that he's going to put the sheep on his right. He's going to put the goats on his left. See, it's interesting because Jesus is talking to not a bunch of farmers and stuff, these four guys that he's talking to up on this mountain. They're fishermen, all right? But they all understand the concept of like, they've all seen it with their own eyes of like what farmers do. You would let sheep and goats roam around together. They kind of eat the same stuff. They hang out together. They're kind of very similar animals in that sense. But when it's time for like shearing wool and time that you got to take care of the sheep, like stuff with sheep are a lot more valuable to them. And so for them, it's like you got to get the goats out of there. They just cause problems. And so that's what all farmers would do when they were dealing with the sheep. And so here's Jesus. He's saying, picture this. All right, this is all in our future. You will be somewhere for this. Jesus is going to be sitting on his throne in Jerusalem with only like, I don't know, like 100 million angels watching in the background. And everyone around the world is going to show up and Jesus is going to start, like the king is going to start sorting. That's what he's going to be doing. Going through, okay, I want you over here, you over there. All right, you go to the right, you go to the left. All right, I want you five over here. All right, you guys can go ahead and go stand on the right. And he's going to go through, and he's going to go through everybody in the world. He's going to separate from the right to the left. And then Jesus, the king, is going to personally say to those on the right, those that he's kind of describing in this analogy as sheep, all right, these people who have surrendered their life to Jesus, all right, people like hopefully many of us in this room, and I think with a smile and with like joy in his heart, he is going to look at them and he's going to say, come home. Welcome home. Come on in, you who are blessed by my Father. He says, inherit the kingdom. I've planned this place for you, this kingdom of mine, everything that I've been talking about, everything that I've been planning for since the creation of the world. He's saying, this is for you. I cannot wait to share this with you. I cannot wait to show you what I have planned. I am so excited. He says, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world, from the beginning. Just think about this. What do you think that would feel like if you were one of those people in that group? What do you think that's going to feel like? This is God of the universe inviting you in, saying, well done. Come on in. And then he explains why. He says, for I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. And I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. And I was a stranger and you took me in. And I was naked and you clothed me. And I was sick and you took care of me. And I was in prison and you visited me. Now, at first, it almost looks like Jesus is saying you got to do a bunch of good stuff to get in, doesn't it? I mean, isn't that what it looks like? I mean, on the surface, I was reading this week. I'm like, that sounds an awful like religion. That sounds an awful like the opposite of what he has said in the past. Like, doesn't that sound like do all these good things and you're going to earn your way in and everything's going to be good? By the way, that's what religion is. It's a bunch of do's and don'ts that you have to do in order to appease God so that someday when you die, which you all will, you will stand before God and he's going to look at all your good stuff and be like, I really need you on my team. Come on in. You know? As if that's going to happen. I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like here. Like, doesn't this contradict all the other things that the Bible says? Doesn't this contradict other things that Jesus himself has said? Like where it says we get saved by, we get to heaven by grace through faith, not by the good stuff that we do? It's a couple things. Number one, you got to remember that Jesus is not giving us a theology of how to get to heaven here. All right? That's not his point. That's not what he's trying to do. He's telling us what will happen. He's not saying, hey, you volunteered at like the soup kitchen so many times, you're good, all right? If you do that, whatever the number is, all right, I can't wait to have you in because we got soup. You know, I don't know what he's going to be saying there. That's not what he's saying at all, not that, all right? That's not how we get in. God already tells us that that's just not how this thing works. God actually tells us that everyone's guilty. God says you and you and you and you and you and me. God says we're all guilty, and it don't matter how much good we think we are or how much good we think we do. See, the difference between the sheep and the goats here, the difference between these two groups of people is that those who truly believe, it shows up in their life. And guess what? God notices it. He sees it. And Jesus says when this day happens, which by the way, kind of reiterate, it's on the schedule. You can't stop it from happening. It's coming. It's on the calendar. We just don't know when it is. But it's coming. God knows. He's saying he will look back on that day and he will look at the way that these people have lived their life. And from that, he will be able to tell if you truly surrendered to him or not. Actually, James kind of says the same thing in his book. This is Jesus' half-brother. He writes this a few decades, a couple decades maybe after this. And James says, hey, if you say that you trust in Jesus, like you got that faith that you trust in Jesus, but there's no action behind it, he's like, then you don't really trust. Simple as that. Like if you have Jesus in you, and if that's true, you could say it all you want. Yeah, I got a relationship with Jesus. It's all good. All right, you could say that, you know, your whole life, but that doesn't really do anything. Like if you actually have Jesus in you, James says, it's going to spill out of you. That's just how it works. There should be some evidence based off that decision. Now, many of you know that we were on vacation over the last couple weeks or so, and when we pulled up to the house, I immediately knew that someone had been there, okay? And because there was stuff all over our front yard. From one of you, I don't know who it was, but I got my suspects, but things like these mushrooms, you know, sticking all over there's like little animals and things. It looked like a fairy garden, my front yard. It's not the look that I'm going for, by the way. So whoever it was, like if you left your yee-haw flag on my front porch, you can come get it after the service. There was like cans of baked beans. This Superman doll was sitting on my chair on my front porch. I was greeted by little critters or, you know, this kind of stuff, which is, yeah, I'm like, oh, my neighbors think I'm dressing up for like, you know, July 4th, like 250. You know what I mean? This is what we do. We had tiki torches over our yard and stuff. It was just all weird. So I don't know how many garage sales it took one of you guys to pull this off. But again, your stuff will be sitting here after the service. You can come get it. But and there's tons of stuff. I got a bunch of stuff in my house. I would have filled up this box with all the little things. But here's the thing. I didn't see anybody do it. Okay? I wasn't there. I didn't watch anybody strategically place Twinkies all over my porch. I didn't watch anybody sneaking through my yard carrying a rabbit. All right? I didn't see anybody do any of that stuff. But I knew someone had been there. I mean, I knew somebody had been there. Why? Because they left evidence behind. They did. And that's kind of what Jesus is talking about here. See, you can't like, mushroom fell out. All right, you can't see faith in a sense of like, I can't go to you and say, hey, like, I want to physically see your faith. Right? You can't see that. Right? Like nobody can look inside your heart and see whether you genuinely belong to Jesus or not. But when Jesus changes lives, what the Bible tells us is that it produces genuine faith, and that faith leaves evidence behind. You know what you start doing? Start doing crazy stuff. It's like radical changes, by the way. Like, you start thinking about how you can reach your neighbor that you never talked to. Of like, oh man, I don't know. Does that person know Jesus? If this person were to die tomorrow, are they going to heaven or are they going to hell? Does that bother me if I don't know? You start thinking about stuff like this. Your employees, your boss, your kids. These are the kind of things that become the forefront of your mind. All right, you start giving when there's nothing in it for you. You start serving when nobody's watching. You start caring for people who have nothing to offer you. See, these people that Jesus separates out on his right, they have surrendered 100% of their life to Jesus. They're not playing the religious game. And the way that they live their life acts as evidence proving that they have made that decision. And they're in, which is awesome. But even these Jesus followers are going to be a little confused. When they hear that, they're just like, okay, what? And some will actually say back to Jesus, they're going to be like, okay, Jesus, we're not arguing with you that we, you know, we want to be in your kingdom and we're all about like we want to go to heaven and it's going to be awesome and we're all in on that, Jesus. But we don't remember doing any of these things. Like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Like, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry? I don't remember you ever being hungry. I don't ever remember feeding you. Or when did we ever see you thirsty? Or when did we ever give you anything to drink? I just don't really know. I don't really remember any of that. When did we see you as a stranger? Or when did we take you in or without clothes and clothe you? I don't remember ever giving you any clothes. All right, when did we see you sick or in prison? When did we ever visit you? Jesus, we don't know what you're talking about. That's what they're going to say, which in my case, I'm like, dude, just shut up and go into heaven. Like, that sounds awesome, okay? But they're going to question, like, Jesus, that's awesome. We're all in. We're super excited. But, like, what are you talking about? And the king, he says, will answer them. And he's going to say, truly, I tell you that whatever you did for one of the least of these, who are the least of these? These are people who are in need. Specifically, I'd argue, fellow Jesus followers who are in need. Meaning, whenever you take care of each other, this is what the church is supposed to be, by the way. This is why church is so important. Okay, this is not my idea. All right, coming to church, meeting on Sunday morning, singing, doing Bible study, stuff like that. This is not my idea. This was Jesus' idea. And Jesus actually tells us, he says, don't neglect going to church. Like, this should be a priority in your life. You should go. This should be important. And part of the reason why that is we're supposed to be building relationships with each other. We're supposed to be helping each other, growing in our relationship with Jesus. And those who are in need, the rest of us, we come alongside of them and we take care of each other. He calls us brothers and sisters of mine. That's what we are. That's how he views us. He says, we actually do that. He says, when you're actually taking care of people, you're actually doing that for me. By the way, can I brag on you for just a second? Some of this stuff you guys don't even know. But here's the deal. That, like, it's stuff like this That's why we as a church family, which you guys, a lot of you know about this, but that's why we as a church family completely take care of two orphanages in Thailand every day. We supply their needs every single day. We've done this for years. Children on the other side of the world who literally have nothing. We provide everything for them. And you guys, by the way, here they are. You guys, some of them, we have like 55 to 60 kids that we take care of. You guys provide everything. All right? We don't partner with any other church or anything like that. It's just you. All right? It's just us. Right? That's why we as a church family, we help churches in the Central African Republic. All right? The CAR, by the way, has one of the world's lowest life expectancies, meaning people die in an early age because of disease like malaria and AIDS, and poverty runs rampant there. And so what we do is we partner with sister churches of ours who are there making a big difference in their community. In fact, because of the high mortality rate, there's orphan children like everywhere. They're just all over the place. And so the church, our sister churches, our brothers and sisters have stepped up there, our African brothers and sisters, and they have adopted those orphans. And so think about it. You got these small churches who have a bunch of young moms and young dads. These church families are taking in all of these kids when their parents die. And this is kind of the thing that we're able to do. And so what we do is we, with those churches that are there, we provide school and education that meets in their buildings, but we pay for the teachers. All right, we do this every year. And not only that, we pay the teacher's salary. It's just us doing it. We're not partnering with anybody else. It's just us and these churches. And we also provide a lunch every school day for each and every one of these kids, which lunch is like their big meal of the day. And for a lot of them, I'm sure it's their only meal of the day because these parents, they can't afford to feed all these kids that they have, you know, living in their house. And so with that, the church doesn't have to charge tuition for any kid because nobody would be able to pay that anyway. And so we're able to do that. You cover that. A lot of you guys, you don't even know. Right? That's why we send hundreds of pounds of rice and food to Burma each and every year. Right? We don't go through some agency that takes 10%. We don't do anything like that. We have our own contacts where we know that 100% of our money goes to food for men, women, and children who are actively being bombed by their own government. In fact, when we were there in Thailand, we went to the Burma border, and just back in March, and you could hear the bombs at night of the planes bombing these people. And a lot of these are Christians, brothers and sisters who are being bombed and have nothing. And we get to help them. See, when you give to Grace, you get to be a part of that. I mean, think about it, guys. That's why we're building. That's why we're making more space. The best thing that we could possibly do for anybody is to lead them to a place, is to fulfill our mission that Jesus, by the way, gave us. It's not our idea of reaching every single person here in Seneca County and around us with the great news that Jesus loves them and offers them a relationship with him. I mean, it all revolves around that. It doesn't matter whether they're rich or poor or black or white or if they're a man or a woman. It just doesn't matter. Their age doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how screwed up you are. We all start at the same place without them. And so Jesus is saying, the truth is, when you gave to others, when you helped others, when you shared with others, when you served others, I took that is actually you giving to me. And I took that as you helping me and you sharing with me and you serving me. Do you see Jesus' heart through this? Do you see what's important to him? Meaning when you really surrender, like really surrender, it changes you. It changes you. Your heart starts beating for the things that makes God's heart beat. And Jesus sees these things that you do for others, and he thinks, oh, that's awesome. You're actually doing that for me. He's like, you're feeding them for me. You're helping me. You're building that for me. And when you think about it, I mean, it's crazy. We get to serve the God of the universe. Like, that's the way he takes it when we serve the people around us. Just last week, we were up in the state up north on vacation. And we had a little camper that we were borrowing that we used for the week. And I had to empty out the black water tank. All right, I'm like, okay, how do we do this? Let's try not to get too messy. So I was like, I probably should get some gloves. You know what I mean? And so I stopped at Dollar General. I just bought one pair of gloves. And I'm standing in line, and it's taken a while. The lady in front of me, with her adult grown son, they have like two big carts full of stuff, you know, like groceries and all kinds of things. And so that's taken a while. And there's like a line of people behind me. And as I'm standing there, I realize that her card's not working, so they're trying to pull together enough cash, and her son, and so they're getting it, and they realize that they're like 20, I don't know, 20 something dollars short. And so for me, I'm standing there, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna help her out. I kind of feel bad for the lady, and I'm gonna help her out. But I'll be honest with you, that wasn't like totally my heart. All right, so I covered it for him, But part of it is, yeah, part of me is like, I have sympathy and I have compassion for this lady because she's got nothing. And I don't know if she deserves it or not. I don't know if she's blowing all her money, something like I don't know any of this stuff. I don't know this lady. But then the part of me, the other part of me is like, I really want this to speed up, you know? And I, for 20 bucks, I could get out of here with my gloves and go take care, you know, live my life. And so I'll be honest with you, like, part of my heart, I feel like, was there, but then the other part of my heart was like all about me. I'm going to help this person, all for me. See, Jesus, by the way, sees the heart, not just the action. And I was reading this week, you know, so both parts are kind of there, but I was reading this week, I was just thinking, I was like, well, instead of being like, oh man, it's kind of a bummer, or well, I feel pity on this lady. You know, as I was reading this week, I was like, man, I get the privilege of serving others in different ways, like creative ways, which is actually serving him. I don't think about that much. I'm sure I know it's true or whatever, but like, I don't think about that on a daily basis. How awesome is that? Like, how much of a privilege is that? And if that doesn't motivate you, then the next thing Jesus says will. He says this. Then he will also say to those on the left, you guys, okay? Shouldn't have sat on that side today because you're going to hell, okay? So those on the left, these are the goats. He says, you have to go. Depart from me. You guys need to leave. You are cursed into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Imagine sitting on his left on that day. Terrifying. The God of the universe is just sitting there. He's doing all of his things. He's rewarded these people, and you're like, oh man, I can't wait for my reward. This is about to be awesome. What am I going to get? They get to go in the kingdom. All right, they get that relationship that we were created to have. Like, that's cool. And then he turns to you. He's like, you guys have to leave. You guys have to go to hell. Now, the world would look at this and say, that's not fair. That's not fair. How dare Jesus? That's not right. How could I believe in a God who's not fair? Well, just throwing this out there, actually, this is the most fair and just thing God could possibly do. This is God saying, hey, you. And I don't think he does this with joy. I think at first he's got joy. He's smiling. He's pumped. He's energized. He's like, dude, this is going to be awesome. We're going to live for eternity together. I'm going to be your king. Everything is going to be right. And then immediately smiles off his face. And I think he dreads this. But he's saying, you chose, you made the decision to live a life without me. And so I'm actually giving you what you decided your entire life. By the way, a godless eternity is a living hell. By the way, you know what's not fair? What ain't fair is a God who is perfect, who's never done anything wrong in his life, who is our creator, right, choosing to pay for our rebellion. Right, rebellion that we chose with our own free will. That's what's not fair. In fact, just so you know, hell is the only fair, is, is the only thing fair about eternity. The only thing fair about eternity is hell. By the way, you also notice hell's not meant for us, right? Who's it meant for? For the devil and his angels. It's meant for Satan and the angels who followed him. We were never meant to go there. God never wanted us to go there. But he tells us many of us, or many, unfortunately, will end up there. He says, for I was hungry and you gave me nothing. And I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. And I was a stranger and you didn't take me in. And I was naked and you didn't clothe me. I was sick and in prison. You never took care of me. And then they too will answer, similar to what the other people answer. They're going to be like, whoa, Jesus, hold up, let's talk about this for a second. All right, when did we ever see you hungry? What do you mean you were hungry? I would have fed you. I would have shared with you. So I think there's going to be a bunch of surprise church people on this day, by the way. He said, well, we never remember seeing you thirsty. When were you ever a stranger without clothes or sick or in prison? And when did we not help you? I would have helped you if I would have just known you needed help. Then he will answer them, truly I tell you that whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Think about it. In this context, he's talking about Jesus' followers. He's talking about the least of these poor, and in fact, Jesus' followers in need, which is crazy to think about. Jesus so identifies himself with us, those of us who have given our lives to him, which isn't everybody in this room, but Jesus so identifies himself with us as his followers. I mean, what's he calls us? He calls us his brothers and sisters. He so identifies himself with us that he takes personally how we treat other Jesus followers. Is that kind of crazy to think about? And he also takes personally how we, as Jesus followers, are treated by others. Meaning when you do something kind for someone, Jesus takes it as you are doing something kind to him. And when you do something unkind to someone, especially fellow Christians, Jesus takes it as you are doing something unkind to him. He takes it personally. By the way, the flip side is true. When you are wronged by others, he takes that personally as well. Why? Because he cares, because he's involved, and because he sees. A lot of times we just don't feel like he sees, but he does. And so Jesus says, and they will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. And that's how Jesus ends the conversation. That's how Jesus ends the day. He says there's two groups of people. I view everybody in two groups. There's people who have followed me and people who haven't. There's people who have made the decision to give their life to me and there's people who haven't. There's two groups. There's two destinations. There's no third option. Jesus doesn't say, hey, some go to heaven, some go to hell, and everybody else gets a participation trophy and they're in middle ground. No, he doesn't say that. You're either with the king or you're not. You either belong to Jesus or you don't. And here's what scares me about this. Both groups are surprised. The sheep didn't realize the significance of what they had done. That was good. And the goats didn't realize the significance of what they had just brushed off throughout their life. Meaning there are going to be people standing in front of Jesus one day who spent their lives assuming that they were totally fine. These are people who went to church. These are people who believe in God. These are people who have been baptized. They're just really, really, really good people. But Jesus is saying it's not just believing that I exist or that I'm real. It's not just claiming to be a Jesus follower. Like, remember my porch? Right? I didn't see a person do it. I didn't see a person set this down. But obviously, someone had been there. Why? Because they left behind evidence. See, if you claim Jesus in your life, which probably is everybody in here, we probably all claim it. My question for you is, what evidence is there? What evidence do you got that is real? Because if you claim Jesus in your life, it changes you. Like, how are you different than the world around you? How are you different from everybody at work? I'm not saying you should be in the world, You should be a part of the world in the fact that we are supposed to be out there reaching people. Jesus was. My question for you is, how is your life different? Are your goals the same goals as everybody else around you? Do you have the same, do you do the same things? Do you value the same stuff? How is your life any different? Has it changed the way you spend your money? Has it changed the way you use your time? Are you unbelievably generous? Are you more compassionate? Are you always willing to serve? Not just the easy people to serve. Everybody in the world can serve people who are easy to serve, people who deserve it. I'm talking about the people who don't deserve it. All right, the family members that have wronged you in some way, that persons you're always arguing with who's got different political views than you do. All right, I'm talking like your boss, your rivals on the team or at work or whatever. Like, do you serve them? How are you doing at that? Because one of the most dangerous things you could possibly do is confuse being around Jesus here at church with belonging to Jesus. And you can know all the stuff. You come here every single week and you know when to stand, you know when to sit, and you can sing the songs and know the Bible. You can even pray all week. You can fool your friends. You can fool your family. You can fool me, your pastor. You can fool yourself. But you can't fool the King. The King is coming. You can't stop it. And he's coming in glory and power with his angels, and he's coming to make everything wrong right. And the only thing that will matter on that day is, do you belong to the King? And so we got two groups of people in here, the way Jesus separates it. Some of you guys have given your life to Jesus, but if you're honest with yourself, you're like, the evidence has been lacking lately. You're like, man, I don't know if my life's much different than everybody else around me. Like it's kind of the same. It doesn't look any different from the outside. And I'm just saying, you better watch out. Like, that's a red flag. You should question yourself. Are you sure you've made that decision? Or are you fooling yourself like everybody else here? And then others of you, man, you just haven't made that decision yet. Maybe you've been putting off for some reason. I don't know. Maybe you're like, well, I just don't got all my questions answered. Or maybe you're sitting here, you're like, oh man, I'm all about Jesus. But you just can't think of a time where you actually made that decision in your mind. I'm just saying, then how do you know that you did it? And you need to surrender to him today. And so we're going to sing one more song here. And instead of, for you, instead of singing the song with everybody else, I mean, you can stand up like everybody else and everything else. But instead of singing, you should be, you know what, you should be surrendering to him right now. He doesn't owe you tomorrow. You should be taking time. And you don't have to say anything out loud. He knows your every thought. And you just spend that time with Jesus right here, right now, over the next 5 minutes, and just say, God, you don't have to do anything complicated. It's actually super easy and freeing. Where you just go before God in your mind, and you're just like, I am deciding on you today. I'm taking care of this once and for all. I am giving my life to you. Do with me whatever you wish. It's a scary thing, but it's the best decision you could ever make in your entire life. And I would encourage you, don't wait. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for giving us the insight, giving us a glimpse of what that day will look like. God, we will be somewhere that day. And that should make us think. And that should make us question, not you, Lord. That should make us question us. Lord, if there's anybody in here that they have not given their life to you, that we ask that you would push them and call them and do whatever you got to do. Push them to make that decision today. There's no better day in the history of this world for them to do that. Because again, Lord, you don't owe us tomorrow. You don't owe us that. God, we thank you for loving us, and not just loving us, but proving your love for us on that cross. And God, we thank you for everything. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.